Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming back to the stage Chairman of the Churchill Club, Mr. Rich Brenner.
How was dinner? Let's thank the Hyatt. I think they did a great job. So tonight we are honored to welcome Randall Stephenson to Silicon Valley. I've had the opportunity to get acquainted a little with Randall over dinner, and I think AT&T is a much better firm for him being there. He took over in June of 2007 as the chairman of the board and the chief executive officer. Randall was born in Oklahoma City, and he began his career with Southwestern Bell in 1982 in the Information Technology Organization. He progressed through a series of leadership positions with SBC, and he declined to give me any embarrassing stories, so I'm really sorry.
There are too many of them to filter through.
Oh, too many to filter through, okay. In 2004, he was named the Chief Operating Officer of SBC, a position which he continued to serve after the acquisition of AT&T Corp in 2005 and Bell South in 2006. In 2005, he was appointed to the new AT&T's Board of Directors, and we can't tell you how honored we are to have you with us, Randall. Thank you. We're also very pleased to welcome back to the Churchill Club stage a longtime friend of the club, Quentin Hardy, from the Silicon Valley Bureau Chief of Forbes magazine. He joined the magazine. Whoa! You have a fan club. I like that. That's cool. He joined the magazine in 1999 and has written cover stories on Yahoo, Google, telecommunications, and philanthropy, among others. And he is a regular on the weekly television show Forbes on Fox. Please join me now in welcoming Randall Stephenson and Quentin Hardy to the Churchill Club.
Thank you very much. And in honor of this evening's topic, our guests request that you now turn on all your phones.
Please do.
Maybe download a couple of songs, send a few text messages, you know. Somebody's got to pay for the food.
We find no offense from the radio.
There you go. He'll be cool with that. All right, well, this is the Churchill Club in the Silicon Valley. So I know you're all thinking you're a pretty wired, connected, always-on kind of bunch. I need you to think about this. Today, Randall Stephenson had 500 million wireless calls. He had 144 million text messages. He also had 300 million calls on landlines in homes and offices, but judging from the earlier load, they probably just all rolled into voicemail, right? I'm obviously talking about the AT&T network as a whole and not his personal holdings, which are nonetheless substantive. AT&T is the world's largest network. It has 547,000 miles of fiber. It carries 36 megabits a day per man, woman, and child in the United States. That's the rough equivalent of the daily data haul in the AT&T network, 36 megs a day for everyone in the U.S. He told me just before the dinner there are 214 million devices connected to the network. Aside from wireless phones and PCs, this includes such things as ATMs, gas pumps, largest provider of BlackBerry services. There are 38 data centers worldwide with 2.14 million square feet of floor space, 100,000 vehicles serving the network, 5 million Napster songs downloaded. And, you know, this audience, all they want to talk about is how they can't get iPhone coverage on the 280 Sand Hill Road exit.
Fred.
What a bunch of ingrates.
Get it fixed, Fred.
Buy your own damn tower. All right. Turning to financials, in the third quarter, operating revenues of $30.1 billion, a current market cap of $250 billion. And this year, AT&T will spend $18.5 billion on sustaining and upgrading this network, $18.5 billion. The size of the business is obviously staggering, and it's noteworthy that this AT&T has its roots in the Southwestern Bell, the smallest. It was sort of the run of the baby Bells during the 84 divestiture.
The smallest.
Two years after Randall joined, he went and worked in Mexico and the consumer business and She said he was CFO and COO, a number of other positions before assuming his job as CEO last July?
June,
excuse me. And has been a key part of Ed Whitaker's drive since about 1996 to realize the dream that this business is really about scale. Since 1996, SBC under Whitaker went on an acquisition drive that included taking over PacBell, Ameritech, SNET, Bell South, AT&T Wireless, and of course AT&T itself. And of course, you haven't slowed it down. Did Dobson as your first acquisition? That was
$5 billion.
$5 billion. And the spectrum off Aloha and the 700 megahertz for $2.5 billion. Not bad for your first 6 months.
I guess. Go to your board and say you want to spend $2.5 billion for a company with no revenues.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. It's like Silicon Valley, isn't
it? Yeah. Just tell them you're a visionary. Seems to work. So you know, today AT&T is one of the few real giants in the network that is powering the entire globe. Verizon, BT, Deutsche Telekom, NTT in Asia. After that, well, Comcast in the U.S. and some overseas. After that, it, you know, there is no other. But we're here to talk about how we're going to take that a little bit further tonight. That's just the start, right? We're 6 months into it. When I was talking about those financials, we talk about wired, and we talk about wireless, and we talk about data revenues, but tell me, you know, thinking about the business 3 years and 5 years out, are those silos still relevant? Is that the right way to think about the kind of business you're in?
I don't think the customer will think about it that way. I think the customer, you know, when they make a voice call, that voice call 5 years out is going to be on whatever handset you happen to be carrying now. You know, we telco white-knuckle geeks, right, are going to be finding the cheapest way and the highest quality way to transport that call. We hope if you're in your house, it gets intercepted by the wireless modem that's doing your broadband, and that's a VoIP call, ultimately. Mm-hmm. So the customer, you know, is going to think of it, voice is that handset, that's where all my call logs are, that's where my contacts are, that's all of that is there. They'll be buying broadband and video from the same provider. You know, we have our folks from AT&T Mobility over here. They just opened the first experience store in San Francisco. When was that?
Middle of the month,
November, and you walk into this store, and it's the whole array of products and services that AT&T sells out of that store. That's the way we'll be going to market. I think that's the way most people will be going to market at that point in time.
Well, it sounds good, but it's also one of the bigger changes to the company. You know, despite all those acquisitions, the Bells looked a lot like each other functionally and operationally. You could merge wireless with wireless. Now you're talking about, I don't know, a consumer-facing business and a business, an enterprise-facing business. What's all this do to your financial model and your organizational model moving into a we-sell-connectivity business?
You think about what's happened since 96. You went through all of the mergers and so forth, and ultimately buying AT&T and ultimately bringing the wireless company into it. And you step back and you think about what we have told Wall Street we're going to do by bringing all these companies together. We're saying we're going to take $9 billion of run rate cost out of this business. And you just stop and think, how is that even possible? The reality is it's possible because these businesses grew up by virtue of the regulatory framework, right?
Mm-hmm.
You sold local telephone service out of that company. You spun off AT&T, or the AT&T spun off the local companies. The long distance was in here. You had to create new companies for selling data. And, oh, that wireless thing, keep that separate, right? The regulators did not want all that together. These rules are coming down. They're allowing these companies to be acquired, and guess what happens? When you start tearing these walls down and restructuring the business, $9 billion of inefficient costs comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost structure fundamentally changes. I believe over the next 2 to 3 years, your approach to the market changes. The way you contract for services, bill for services gets more simplistic. From a customer standpoint, this is all good. The service gets cheaper. The experience gets better.
What are the right metrics of success?
From our standpoint,
yeah.
You know what I want to measure?
What should I look at?
What I want to look at month in and month out is how many devices are connected to this network. You made the statement. We have 214 million devices hanging off this network. That's a lot, right? That's approaching a quarter of a billion devices hanging off this. The more devices that are hanging off this network, the more functionality that we build into the network, the more value we create by this network.
Mm-hmm. It sounds very pretty, and it's the ultimate realization of the customer expectation I just want to communicate.
Right.
I really don't care what the form factor is. I want to communicate wherever I am, however I can, and I'll pick it.
However they want.
You know, and
right.
You're up for that. But tweaking that slightly, that sounds like, you know, what's supposedly the death knell out here in the Silicon Valley, the commodity business. You're just hauling bits. You're just selling connectivity, and connectivity is connectivity. Personally, I never minded commodity businesses because oil's a commodity business and Cargill's a commodity business. You manage it
okay,
right, you
though.
Can make money. But is this a commodity business?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's hauling bits, what you do, and is that a commodity
it's
business?
It's always been a commodity business. I tell our people in our company, in fact, I've told them, here is our vision. You know, we connect people to their world everywhere they live and work and do it better than anybody else. Don't try to overcomplicate it. That's what we do. We move ones and zeros around the world. We do it better than anybody else does it. There is a great business there. But if you're going to move ones and zeros around for all the products and services you people in this room are developing, all the applications you're developing, it takes $18.5 billion of capital every year to fund and finance that.
By the way, you feel good about that number, $18.5 billion?
No, I want it to be lower, right?
What you got in mind?
But the point of that is you got to be scale. You have to have scale to be effective at a commodity business and to make money at a commodity business. You're spreading a lot of fixed costs over a lot of ones and zeros. So scale is critical.
It's a real change of gears from the kind of talks I had with telecom guys in the 90s where they kept saying, we're not a commodity player. We're going to have value-added services. We're going to have all sorts of value-added apps. Of course, you bought a lot of those companies, so I guess that didn't work out.
We
for
are still going to have value-added services. But what are those services, right? When you get on this network, the services we sell are, we'll host your content for you on the edge of this network. That's a value-added service. We'll do IP collaboration for you. We just bought a company 2 months ago, Interwise, who lets you get on the web and have web conferencing and so forth. We'll do security on this network. We'll have standard or service level agreements on this network.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of value added services in being a network provider.
Right, but it's not a feature set per se. That you're going to leave that up to other developers.
We'll do some. Look, you can't do everything yourself in a business like this. I happen to think we're a great partner. If you look at kind of how we have grown over the last few years, we didn't want to go out and create the best portal in the industry for our broadband product, so what did we do? We partnered with Yahoo. We needed to move into Latin America in a hurry. We didn't go down there and spend a bunch of money. We partnered with Telmex and America Mobile. You saw the deal we just announced with IBM, where we're going to move and be the sole source network provider for IBM. You know, we're just a really good partner, Apple. With the iPhone, I think it was a classic case. So we're always looking for great partners to help take advantage of this network we've built.
Okay, so in the world to come, aside from those, who by name or just illustratively is an important partner for you? Who are key allies for a company like yours in the world?
Well, I listed a few of them, right? And in fact, if those are partnerships that I personally manage. Carlos Slim, you know, at America Mobile. This is very important. IBM. Is a very, very important partner to us. Obviously, Apple is a critical partner. Now, you kind of start moving down the value chain, and there are some names that you wouldn't even have heard of. They're very small companies. We have a guy in Atlanta who is basically, I don't know if you know it, you go out on our website, and there is a part in our website that tells you how you develop into our network architecture. If you want to develop an application, there's a guy who's developed some really unique ringtones out there. And he's doing a great job. You've never heard of him. He's just started out on his own. He's making a lot of money, and we're doing okay off of being partnered with him. So you're going to see those kind of things develop over time, I think very quickly.
Okay, and does the roundup of your competitors change in this world? Your natural enemies?
My natural enemies. Well, I mean, you see one competitor forming now, right? Google. I think they have declared they're going to be in the cell phone business. That's okay. If you look at our industry, my 25 years I've been here, back in the 80s, it was the alternative access providers, the CATs, right? Those were the big competitors, and they're going to be so disruptive to the industry. And they came, they did become, you know, viable competitors. MCI actually became one of those. And then, you know, the competitors changed over time. And it's always, this industry is always evolving. The competitors are always changing.
Well, since we're playing current events, I think you have to give Google a little more credit than the CATs, maybe. They've already changed around a number of the rules of the 700 megahertz auction. The lobbying they did last summer for open access devices, any software you can put on the network, those kind of agreements that the FCC went along with, seem to have inflected Verizon's decision yesterday to say any device will be allowed on our network once it's tested in our lab. What did you think of that announcement by Verizon?
I thought it was overblown. I mean, the industry's headed that way, right? I mean, that's exactly where this industry heads. Again, go back in time. The wireline network, what happened? Over time, it became kind of open access, open architecture. Look at the broadband world, the same thing. Even the PC world, right?
Okay.
Anytime on connectivity, that's where this thing goes.
Have you made a Verizon-esque statement about an open network?
I would
Will you?
Suggest to you we are probably one of the most open networks in the world, not just in the United States. We have thousands of people developing into our architecture today. All the handsets we sell are Java equipped. You know,
Okay.
who doesn't know how to develop into Java, right? If you want to buy a handset on our network without a contract, fine, just pay retail price for the handset, right? The only reason we make people sign a contract is if we're subsidizing it heavily. So I would suggest to you, we feel like we're a very open network, and I think you'll see that continue to open up.
I think you made an interesting point just there. One of the big points around the Google phone and Verizon's announcement to me is the end of the subsidized handset. They'll put it on the network, but if you're going to jump out again, they're not going to subsidize it.
Oh, absolutely.
So that whole financial model is going to go away, isn't it?
Well, interestingly enough, we're in these businesses to make money, right? And so we have.
You got that?
The industry has taken on an interesting model, right? We have subsidized these expensive handsets. We don't make you pay for them.
Well, early on, you had to convince people to pick up those bricks and use
That's
them for a
right.
couple of years, and you had to have a cash revenue you could show Wall Street, but it's not really making sense anymore. How
Yes.
much longer will it last?
Oh, I think you see the model change. The iPhone is the first shot across the bow, right? I mean, here is a device that has such usability and functionality in it that you can sell it and you can make money off selling the device. So, you know, I have equipment manufacturers all the time saying, we'd like to have a similar deal to Apple. I said, well, make a device that we can sell for a profit and you can have that deal,
Right.
right?
By the way, is it a reverse arrangement with Apple where they get some percentage of the contract back to Apple?
Yeah, that's right. If the customer comes into our store, you know, it kind of turns the model upside down. The traditional model says, I put a lot of money into that handset,
Right.
and I get the money back over time.
In this case, the handset's drawing somebody into your store. How much does Steve get on each 20-year contract?
Yeah, we haven't disclosed that. On a 20-year
No
contract?
Time like the present.
No, we haven't disclosed it. But it did. It turned the model upside down. You're making a little money on selling the handset, and so you share some of the ongoing revenue stream with the equipment manufacturer.
What else did you learn from the iPhone?
I got to tell you, the iPhone told me that the way the industry has gone at the handset business has been so poorly done. You look at the return rate of handsets. You go buy a handset from one of our distributors, Motorola or whatever, the return rates are ridiculously high. Here is a company who came out with a really software-intensive handset, and right out of the bat, the return rate, the quality on this thing, the RF quality, the voice quality on it is the best device we have. All right? He isn't just going to change the game in terms of user functionality and capability. He's changing the game in terms of the quality standards of the handsets that come out.
Right. Okay, with that in mind, tell me what you think of the Google phone and the open handset line.
It'll be interesting, right?
Oh, that's a generous word. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, so you think about I think there are six major operating systems out there on our network today.
Right.
You know, BlackBerry is probably the most well-known operating system. Then you got Microsoft, and you got Symbian, and you got Palm. And here are all these people that make large carrier-class scaled operating systems. Here comes a new entrant that has never made an operating system, but, you know, they're smart guys. They have some great developers. It will be interesting to see if they know how to develop a carrier-class operating system.
I've seen the phone. I've held the phone. It's a nice phone. Sort of like an iPhone, a little tilted
Yeah.
at the base. HTC says, going to be making it. I'm thinking for T-Mobile, don't know. Second half of 2008, would you carry the phone?
You know, we'll take a look at it. If our customers want the phone and our customers want the operating system, great. You know, it's interesting. Our customers don't say, I want that operating system. They say, I want that phone and that capability.
They like the kind that work. You know, that's really what
they
it comes
kind of
down
expect
to.
It to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're kind of picky. Our customers do tend to be
well,
picky.
I'm not saying it won't, you know. There's every chance. And what is that going to do when you say the most open? By the way, you're basically saying Silicon Valley religion here, the most open network wins. Yeah?
Well, they're all going to be open over time.
Well, that's where I was going. How do I judge one man's open from another? What is an authentically open network in this world?
Well, so, you know, what's open? So folks like yourself can come along and develop applications that I can either download onto my phone or you can have preloaded on a handset that somebody else wants to sell. That's open. That's an open network. The company that wins over time is going to be the company that has the best quality and the best coverage.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change, right? That's how you win in telecom. Best quality, best coverage.
Okay. You mentioned Motorola, and as I was thinking about the Verizon announcement and Google and what you're saying now, I do wonder what this is going to do to the price of handsets. You think Motorola, Samsung, Nokia are ready for the kind of competition they're going to see out of 100 more different handsets being created out of, you know,
classic
the likes of HTC and Chinese manufacturers?
What's it cost to buy a Princess telephone that you plug into the RJ96 in your house?
I don't know.
I had to go buy one. I have a little vacation place up north of San Antonio, and I had to. It was a Verizon territory where I have my house. The line wasn't working. I had to test it. Well, I don't have a typical wired phone, so I went and bought a Princess phone at the Walmart in Marble Falls, Texas.
What color?
$4.99 is what it cost me. All
right.
Right. I'll think about 10 years.
What are you telling me about the price point for a cell phone in 5 years?
I think the price points have to come down in this kind of environment.
Right.
That's good for consumers, right?
How is it for the handset manufacturers?
Very competitive. Very competitive.
Safe bet.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to turn for a minute to your U-verse business. We need to talk about that a little bit.
Sure.
for those in the audience who aren't aware. $6 billion build-out,
mm-hmm.
and it's internet-based TV.
Correct.
And high-speed data to the home. You say you have a cost advantage over Verizon, which is doing fiber.
Right.
At a cost of, what, 16, 20, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Nonetheless, does it give enough connectivity? Well, you tell me what the vision is.
Well, I mean, we had a fundamental decision to make. We said you have to have a television product. I really believe that. In the consumer market, you need wireless first and foremost.
It's a subset of what you're saying before. It's all IP.
That's exactly
right.
Television
just gets eaten by it, too.
And so think about if you're going to deliver TV, you had to make a choice. You know, you could take proven technology, which is basically the cable model, or you could take a look at this new technology that's come out. We call it Internet Protocol, right? And if you said that your objective was first and foremost in everything you do, get to Internet Protocol, it affects your decision-making. Why is that important? If you think about the traditional cable model or even, you know, what Verizon's going, we have all been chasing this idea of getting the biggest pipe into the house you possibly could. You need a pipe this big to get all this data in there. Why is that? Because in the cable model, you're taking 300 or 400 channels of content, you're shutting down that pipe to your set-top box, and you decide what you want to watch.
They're all there at any moment.
Internet protocol comes along. Internet technology comes along and says, whoa, change the game. If you want to watch ESPN, then I'm just going to send you ESPN, but I'm not going to shove all 300 channels down this pipe to your house. So we said the first thing we got to do is get to Internet Protocol and delivering video. That's hard, all right? We've been working with Microsoft. We've been scaling it, but we're there. So now instead of sending 300 or 400 channels down that pipe, I send you whatever it is you want to watch at that point in time. Suddenly, you don't need a pipe this big. You can get by with a pipe a little smaller. You don't have to push fibers deep into the network. I don't have to dig up your flower bed and your driveway to get, you know, a video signal to you. And so we can get there quicker. So it was a very important decision. We did that on TV. Obviously, our broadband service is all IP. And Fred and these folks over here for our mobility company are putting 3G capability throughout our wireless network, so 65 million wireless handsets are about to be IP. The beauty of this is once content is in IP format, IP is IP is IP. You can deliver it anywhere and everywhere you want to deliver it as long as you have an IP-enabled device. That's really important from our standpoint.
Okay. I got a house that was built in 1906. In the kitchen, behind the ceiling, I got a line from the gas light that was put in at the time. I think the phone lines went in a little bit before that. What's the connectivity speed you can put through that kind of copper?
So to that, we will go in and rewire your house when we put TV in.
And a truck. Okay. But for the most part, a lot of the copper is old and brittle. You're thinking it's okay. You really can guarantee delivery to tens of millions of houses.
Oh, when you think about the $6 billion we're spending on this project, a large portion of that is rehabilitating copper.
Okay.
Making sure the copper is fit to carry a signal like that. And so that's a big chunk of it. Then getting fiber into the neighborhood, but not to your house, is you know, the other part.
Right, just by having the heavy connectivity at a home office and connecting within about a half a mile.
Exactly.
Is the idea.
Exactly.
When you announced, you said there'd be 19 million homes by 08. In May, it went down to 18 million homes by 08, and I think it tended more towards 17 by 08. And the run rate in the third quarter looked like about an annual of 500 million. How are you going to get to 17 million by the end of 08? Is there just a lot of stuff that's going to come on really quick?
Oh, yeah. We'll be at 8 million by end of year this year.
Okay.
And so what you're doing is you're out conditioning this plant. You're putting in the fiber. You're building the VHO. It's the central office where you host all of this content and so forth. All of that's going on. We're now turning up one market every month right now. We just turned up Austin this last week. And, you know, so there's markets coming up now, and it'll come up quick. So the infrastructure is being laid, turning up the markets, and they'll start coming on fast. We dropped the number from 18 to 17 because when we bought Bell South, we wanted to rejigger some of the markets.
Okay.
And so we're bringing Atlanta into it, and it's causing us to lose a little bit here and there, but we'll bring the Bell South states in.
Well, from 19 to 17, and then it was $6 billion, and there was an indication that the cost might go up by about $500 million. Is the ROI still there the same way?
Oh, yeah. You know, $6 billion build, I mean, $500 million is a lot of money, but in the context of the business opportunity here, $500 million, you know, it's a reasonable amount of money to put on top of it. It doesn't make the business case fall apart.
And it's kind of like the iPhone we were saying before. If you don't do it, where are you?
Yeah, exactly. You got to have a video product, right? And the other alternative was go fiber to the home, and now that
Verizon's doing that, and they're going to go fiber to the home. They're going to throw down $20 billion. Aren't they going to have an advantage with a stronger network? Didn't three times the money buy them something stronger, you think?
So, again, what it gives, Verizon, and then, you know, you don't fault the logic. It's just two different companies going at it two different ways.
Sure.
They wanted the big pipe into the house.
Yeah.
We wanted IP.
Mm-hmm.
IP was really important to us because with IP, you deliver across all your different platforms, and ultimately you get there quicker and you get broader coverage. See, here's the thing. We have 30 million homes in our footprint.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to get TV capability to the lion's share of those 30 million homes. With a fiber to the home build, we'll not get there. We're not going to be taking fiber to the cow. Over time, what you can expect is these costs and technology come down. We can keep pushing this technology further and further out to rural America as the cost curves come down.
Mm-hmm. And the bill on this, I saw some numbers out of Texas. It was like $99 to $109 a month for full service.
For all services.
Is that going to come down?
You know, competition tends to have that effect.
Well, yeah. I was kind of hoping for a prediction here around a number.
I got to tell you where my prediction is. My prediction is we're selling this TV service out of our mobility stores over here. The average family that has a family talk plan, so dad has a phone, mom has a phone, the kids have a phone, that average household spends $127 a month on wireless. Add video, add broadband. My expectation is that 109 is a $200 number, not a $100 number.
And they're okay with that.
Oh, yeah.
Must be delivering something.
I think there's value in the service.
Okay. What do you need in this world, massive IP connectivity? What do you need now to buy or to build? What's left?
Well, there's a lot going on that we haven't finished. So you think about everything we've talked about. Is centered around this idea that people are using more and more of this stuff. It may surprise you, but the number of voice minutes that travel across our network every year is still growing at 10% year over year. They happen to be predominantly wireless, but voice minutes are still growing. They'll grow 10% this year, next year, and the year after. You can pretty well expect that. Broadband traffic is growing 40% year over year on the consumer side, 60% on the business side. The data traffic on the wireless service is growing fourfold every year. So bandwidth is just exploding. The consumption is exploding. So
how do they find the time? How do they use it?
People are doing this, man. So what is that? What do you need? I mentioned this to you earlier. The bandwidth glut of the 1990s, and all these companies that took write-offs, it's gone. All right, we are now completely obsoleting our IP backbone network. The national IP backbone network that we got when we bought AT&T is being taken down and replaced with an entirely new IP backbone.
So all that dark fiber that got trenched and was part of a big telecom bubble and everybody thought it'll lie there dormant forever, it's all lit up at this point?
I don't know if all the fiber is, but the electronics are there. All right, we're having to replace out electronics and obsolete equipment. Undersea fiber capacity, we have 4 undersea fiber projects going now. You know, China, Far East, Europe. So we're laying new fiber underseas. We're obsoleting our data network in Europe and Asia Pacific. So we're actually building more and more network capacity today. Those are the kind of things we need, and capability on top of all this.
So this ends someday, but not in our lifetime? Is that what you're telling me?
I just don't see what causes it to stop. You know, you think about what's driving this now, and it's just, I would have to tell you, it's fairly primitive applications that are driving all this bandwidth consumption now. On your broadband pipe, you're not delivering high-definition video yet. Bring high-definition video in. These businesses that are growing 60% their bandwidth requirements every year are not doing services like Telepresence or Halo from HP. If you haven't used one of those services, when you use it, you go, oh, my God, this is going to be huge, all right? I had a Telepresence conference last week, and the word I use to describe it is it's just downright creepy. All right, you're sitting here with life-size, high-definition video of the people you're talking to. The voice quality is impeccable. You're making eye contact. And it's life-size, and the guy over here starts talking on the video screen, and you're turning, right? I mean, the sound is coming like that. So this is going to do nothing but drive exponentially more bandwidth. And so we're going to be investing in bandwidth a long time. This is also the reason you pay $2.5 billion for a company that has no revenues. Because all of this data and video consumption is using the spectrum, which, you know, spectrum is the lifeblood of a wireless company. We pay $2.5 billion because we need more spectrum to transport all of this.
And by buying Aloha, you could have taken yourself out of the 700 megahertz auction. Are you out of the 700 megahertz auction?
Oh, no, we'll participate in the auction. Sure.
Okay. You're going to play too?
Sure.
There's always more, right?
Yeah. People will have to put their names in the next week or so, but of course we'll participate. I mean, I think all wireless carriers will. This auction that's coming up and you've read a lot about, it's the 7 megahertz spectrum, and we refer to it as beachfront property.
Right.
It doesn't get any better than this, you know, for carrying signals through walls and carrying high volumes of traffic and so forth. And so this is very important stuff. That's why we spent $2.5 billion for Aloha. It's that same spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And Google made a filing last week. They say they haven't decided, but they made a filing saying, could we use this for other purposes? Could we declare in our financial statements how much we're going to bid? All this stuff, looking for the FCC for some kind of guidance. What was that about?
I have no idea.
Okay. What other services could there be?
Well, so is it video? Is it data? One of the big questions is, you know, can you use this for, maybe it's not a question, but 4G capability, right? Fixed broadband type services. So fixed, mobile, video, data. You know, there's a lot of applications for this.
Well, I don't think they want to be service providers. I think they want to put ads on the Internet. And whatever service provider is out there will be some ally or partner, what have you. What's interesting in that, from your perspective, is in part ad revenue-based connectivity, which will hit your pricing model. How do you respond? Do you go to ad-based revenues as well?
I think everybody will at some level, you know, have ad-based revenues. The cable TV guys are an ad-based revenue model. They have subscription and ad-based revenues, right?
Right.
Broadband, we get some advertising revenues off our broadband product today. If the consumers have an appetite for advertising on their handset,
3411 services, for example.
Classic case, right?
Put in.
I got to be honest with you. I never cease to be amazed at the consumer's willingness to tolerate advertising. So I stopped discounting it.
I'm in the magazine business. You can stop that.
I don't fault it. I'm amazed. I don't know. I just get sick of it. You know, I go online and all the ads online. But will the consumers, you know, be willing to pay $10 for a cell phone if they tolerate a lot of ads? There will be a segment of the market that will do that. Absolutely.
Undoubtedly.
And so why would we not participate in that? We would participate in that.
Well, you're going to need a different ally at that point unless you want to be in some kind of internet-based ad business yourself.
Right.
Have you talked to Yahoo or somebody about doing this?
Oh, of course. We talk all the time. You know, Yahoo has a client I have on my BlackBerry right there, the Yahoo Go phone. And it's just a downloadable client, an application. You just download on it, and boom, you have all of the capability I have on my AT&T Yahoo portal at home, the stocks that I track, the news services that I watch, everything is now there on that handset. The thought of delivering advertising on there is not a quantum leap now. It's a very simple type, you know, intellectual a step to take. And so, yeah, we'll definitely be working with somebody to deliver advertising.
What's your favorite market right now? I know you love all your children, but you go all around the world. What's the most interesting, compelling market you visit?
Oh, India is just fascinating to me. I was in India in July, and you know, here's an economy that's growing 8-9% per year. Infrastructure is still, you know, very much behind. Wireless penetration is like 17-18%. They're adding, I think, the number 6 or 7 million subscribers a month. We have a very good business there. We were the first non-Indian company be granted a license to offer telecom in India. And so we're selling to a lot of multinational corporations that have call centers there and so forth. Our revenues are growing 40% year over year.
So far, so good.
We entered that market in the second quarter of 06, and we built facilities all around the country. Most of those facilities are now at exhaust. We're having to augment most of those facilities. So it's just a fascinating market to me. We need to continue to be growing in India.
Circle back to that. What are those facilities doing?
This is basically IP transport.
Okay.
So voice and data transport for large multinational corporations that have call centers. Cisco, you know, has a big engineering center, development center over there. So those types of things.
You have 38 data centers now. What did I say? 200 million square feet. 2 million square 2 feet.
Million.
Yeah, 2.1.
I wish it were 200 million.
Someday. How many more of those can you build out? Or do you build them and fill them right now?
Right now, the model that we're following... During the 90s, we all went out and built a lot of square footage. And the demand, we built way ahead of the demand. And a lot of us lived to regret it. That square footage is now consumed. Every time we open up new square footage to host websites and so forth for companies, we sell out the square footage before we open it, when we start building. And so the demand for hosting centers is growing tremendously. And we built quite a bit of square footage this year. We put a couple $100 million into it this year.
You're talking about this, you know, CapEx bonanza on every front. What happened? Why now?
Well, the debate, we grew through the excess capacity
right.
of the 90s. That took a little bit. But now, I mean,
but in
literally,
some ways, this is beyond what happened in the 90s.
Oh, yeah. You're seeing what was promised in the 90s happen now in
right.
terms of bandwidth growth,
right,
in
right.
terms of megabits being consumed on the networks. That's all happening now. It's happening on the wireless networks. It's happening on the broadband networks. It's happening on our large business networks. It's really growing at a robust pace that was anticipated some time back.
Mm-hmm. And who's spending big?
In terms of telecom spend?
Big data centers, big telecom spend.
Oh, it's all the large financial institutions. We're spending more. They're slowing down probably right now. But large business, especially multinational corporations. You know, we're kind of a little tainted sitting here in the United States. You know, we see some of the woes in the consumer market, the subprime market. You go overseas, it's still growing, and it's still growing very quickly. And that's driving a lot of what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
So multinational corporations are still spending a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Productivity enhancements, communication capabilities across continents. We just signed a deal with General Motors to be the global provider of network services. So General Motors, if you're an engineer sitting in Detroit or an engineer sitting in London or sitting in India, you have the same experience and the same connectivity regardless of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing similar things for IBM now. Again,
okay.
Multinational in nature.
It's human events. There's always something that can go wrong. What are the big threats to this build-out now?
Oh, it's always the same thing. It's regulation.
And this, the Churchill Club.
Yeah, you know, I heard you talk about the Intel guys, you know, talking about how they need the government to come in and help. You can mark my words, I will never ask the government to come get involved in our business.
Wait, whoa, whoa. Time out. You have 214 million devices connected to the network. How many lobbyists do you have?
We have a lot of lobbyists.
Yeah.
Like that.
And they don't tell the government to get out of the way all the time, do they? Sometimes
they press
for regulatory move.
No. Look, if I had my wish, government would just stay out of our business. You have seen this thing play itself out more times than I can count. You know, you go back to the 1990s we talked about, and people were investing aggressively. We were investing, SBC at the time, back in 2000, we were investing $11 billion a year in network capabilities. Along comes the government and imposes what I'll call artificial competition into the marketplace. Some artificial wholesale pricing and so forth, making us share our broadband facilities with other providers. And what happened? Our $11 billion per year capital investment went in 1 year. I was CFO at the time, from $11 billion to $5 billion. We were keeping the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
There was no return on investing in this business at that point in time. The United States went from number one in broadband in the world to number 16 in a two-year period of time. These rules get litigated. Finally, in 2004, the courts come and say, throw this out. This is not right. 2004, rules get thrown out. Here we are, 2005, 2006, you know, put all these companies together and you're investing $18 billion a year again. You're putting 30 megabits to the home. You're putting 3G and all your wireless capability. You're just continuing to invest in undersea cable projects. So I'm unabashedly about this saying to keep the government out of this and investment will follow.
That first to 16th number is kind of scary. Away from anomalies like South Korea, where it really was a kind of industrial policy and state-sponsored, you think we'll be in the top five in broadband connectivity anytime soon?
I hope so. We keep investing like
well,
this.
Well, hope
we
so. It's one thing. Do you think is it going to happen?
I think it has the potential to be there, yeah.
Okay.
I really do. You know, we're selling broadband now, $15, $20 a month. I mean, you can get some pretty low penetrations at that point. What needs to happen next is we need to get a computer or a PC device at the lower end of the market. You know, you need a $100 to $200 computer. What's keeping penetration from going deep now is there is not computer penetration in the homes. Wireless may become that, right? These wireless devices we all use.
To the extent a handset is a computer at this point,
right.
To the extent a handset's going to go to, did you say $4.99?
That's where the wire, that's where the Princess phone went, right?
Okay, $25, you know. That's a cheap computer.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I think in countries like India and Latin America, that will be the computer. And I think in certain demographics in the U.S., that is the device to access the Internet. I would have been skeptical.
Particularly if your data center is starting to host PC-like functions.
Absolutely. And then applications get developed on that handset that are really usable and user-friendly.
Mm-hmm. So is there a single public policy you'd like to see? Or do you just wish they'd take them all away?
Seriously, it ought to be a mindset of deregulation. Move out of the industry and let the markets work. I mean, even I find it laughable. Eric Schmidt, I know him, and he's a smart guy. And then all this stuff happens with the 700 megahertz auction, you know, and open it for open access. And lo and behold, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago, the guys at Google announced the big alliance, right, with Sprint and a lot of handset makers. And guess what? They got an open access environment. The markets fixed it. You don't need a lot of government regulation. If there's demand for an open access environment, the markets will provide open access markets.
Then why own Spectrum at all? Why not just give it away?
I wish they would. That'd make our networks a lot cheaper to operate.
I can't speak to your books, but on Verizon, the Spectrum they own is valued at $52 billion. You're probably something like that, too. If it went to nothing, you'd be in a bad way.
No, I mean, there's only so much Spectrum out there, right? And again, the 700 megahertz auction is kind of the last available Spectrum out there. And it's kind of funny. If you think about our business, especially the wireless business, you know, valuations kind of fluctuate as regulatory policy and markets come and go and so forth.
Right.
But what's the gold standard? It's the Spectrum,
mm-hmm.
right? And the value of these businesses is all in that Spectrum.
Okay.
You have to own Spectrum to have a service.
We'll go to questions in just a minute, but I'm going to ask a lightning round that I think will probably anticipate a couple of questions. First off, net neutrality.
Yeah.
React.
It's regulation. I mean, net neutrality is regulating the Internet. It's dictating what kind of services can be provided. It's even going so far in some realms as dictating what kind of price could be charged for services. I don't think I have to say much more about regulating our industry.
Okay. national security and turning over phone records and other private communications matters to the government.
Yeah, we are obviously very limited on what we can even talk about in these kind of matters. It's the way we interact with the government at every level, whether it's the local police department, whether it's the FBI, it's real simple. Is the agency requesting the information an authentic agency that's entitled to ask for the information, and do they have the appropriate authority to get it, whether it be a court warrant or certification from the Department of Justice or whatever? It's a very simple process. We don't get into when the FBI comes and says, you know, your wife has been kidnapped and she's been taken across state lines. They have a warrant. Are they authentically the FBI? I don't say, how do I know she's being held against her will? That's not our job.
Is there a point at which you litigate over their rights to take this stuff, and do you think we're getting near that?
It's real straightforward how we interact with governments.
Okay. And lastly, the 3G iPhone, when?
Has Jop announced that? I don't think he's announced that, but you'll have it next year.
Okay. And what's a... I've seen prices on a 3G chipset that say it's going to bump that. The 3G chipset alone is $250 more or $800 more. How much is it going to affect the price of the phone?
I don't know. Steve will dictate where the price of the phone is.
Steve will dictate. I feel better already. And those dropped calls on Sand Hill Road. What the hell can you do about that? Let's
Fred's
going
to be all over that when we finish.
Okay. Do you have any questions from the audience? Danny,
good.
You did a good job.
Well, it's good being
there. We go, in the back. A microphone will come over to you, all right?
AT&T has agreed to do deep packet inspection for Hollywood of pirated movies on the P2P network. What's the difference between the deep packet inspection that you would be doing for Hollywood and the deep packet inspection that NARIS is doing? Isn't it both massive surveillance?
Where's Yang Ben? He and I had a $5 bet on how far that question would be before it came up. I said it'd be number one. You owe me $5, Yang Ben.
Why don't you restate the question, because the audio wasn't...
Well, so I'm sure what the question is about is we have taken a small stake in Yang Ben's company, Voible. And what Voible does is real simple. They try to authenticate the video streams that are going across the network. It's basically trying to help the content providers identify pirated content, right? I don't know where this model goes. It just, we look at the technology. The technology is very interesting. And you know, when we take Disney's content and put on our network, they kind of have an interesting expectation that we'll protect that content. So here's an opportunity to a technology to help us protect that content. And so you know, we'll take a hard look at it and work with the Disneys to see what we can do to help protect their content when we put it on our network.
Another question? Sir.
You talked about Google competing, but there's another area that Google is competing in, which is in the information services area. They've launched a Google 411, and Microsoft's gotten into the 3DA space, and a number of companies. And there's a lot of talk about voice search and voice portals. And that, you know, attacks directly your fee-based 411 business. How do you see that area emerging, and are you planning on, you know, competing with similar services as Google and Microsoft and some of these others come into the ad-supported information voice portal space?
Yeah, of course we will. We have an ad-supported 411 business that we have started now. John, I saw here a moment ago, works for a little company called Ingenio. And we just announced the acquisition of Ingenio a couple of weeks ago. What Ingenio does is they have a very interesting technology. You know, you think about our traditional Yellow Page business. You know, you buy a subscription in the Yellow Page book. There are a lot of companies that don't want to buy their advertising that way, but they say, you produce results, I'll pay you. So Ingenio lets us basically charge the customer based on the number of calls that they receive as a result of the advertising. So success-based advertising. Now I want you to think for a moment about 65 million wireless customers dialing 411. Think about 60 million access lines. Think about 14 million broadband customers. And then think about, you know, what is for local search. And by the way, what we're about is local search. You know, we're not going to get into advertising for national providers and so forth. But local search advertising is a space that's really good for us because these tend to be small businesses. And to sell advertising into small businesses, you need something that's hard to replicate, and that's a premise sales force. Our Yellow Page business has a very large, in fact, I would suggest to you, the biggest premise sales force in the United States selling advertising. So now we can sell advertising into a Yellow Page book. We can sell advertising into our yellowpages.com, which is growing 40% year over year, and we see that continuing. We can sell advertising into the 411 product. You want to advertise on 411. And now you put around that this Ingenio capability that lets me charge you as you receive clicks or calls. We think we have a very viable opportunity here to grow advertising revenues across all these platforms. So this feels pretty good to us. We're going to go into it.
Okay. Another question? Sir.
What happens to Plano telephone service is was the question. I don't even think about it in terms of Plano telephone service. I think about voice, right?
You mean you just want to have voice calls, no data, no video, just have voice. You can have it. It'll cost you $110
million. Yeah, so just an access line coming into the house with a telephone on the end of it. There is, you know, a large segment of the market that's probably going to want Plano telephone service. My daughter, 24 years old, just moved out into her first apartment. She bought our UVerse TV product. She bought broadband and a wireless phone. She would no more think of putting a wired telephone in her house than the man in the moon, right? She just doesn't quite get it. And guess what? The better this wireless service gets, the more it obsoletes the wired telephone service. And so, you know, we as a company, that's a big revenue stream for us. It's declining. Broadband, TV, and wireless have to overcome that. We have finally got to the point where we say, look, that's just where the market's headed. Let's stop fighting it. For years and years, we would only sell you broadband if you bought our Plano telephone service. We said, stop. These guys over here in our mobility stores, if you want to sell just broadband and wireless, sell broadband and wireless because voice is moving to wireless. We recognize that. Not for everyone, but for a large segment of the society, voice is moving to wireless. So it'll continue to decline, I expect, over time. It'll hit some kind of, you know, level point where it doesn't decline as fast. But, you know, the cannibalization from wireless will continue for a while.
Another question? Yes, in the back.
Evidently, Quest Management thought that they had an obligation to evaluate government surveillance requests independently, and they didn't like everything that they were asked to turn over, so they didn't do it. And I'm under the impression that, as a result, they're not in Washington begging for special exemptions from the law from the legislators that you say you would like to leave you alone. What do we make of their decision?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Quest. They didn't show up tonight. But from our standpoint, you know, if you follow the law, you should be protected by the law. We're in a situation where the executive branch, the legislative branch, we're kind of caught in the middle of a conflict between the two. And so all we're asking is to be exempted from that conflict.
Another question? Sir.
Yeah, you bet. We have a couple of products out of the market right now. UVerse is our IPTV product that I spoke of earlier, where we're delivering, you know, multi-stream video, high-def video over a broadband line, basically, is what that amounts to. Home Zone is areas where we will not be building out this capability in the near future, particularly rural America, but we have broadband service. What we have is a satellite set-top box with a broadband modem inside of it. And so you set this up and you get your multi-streaming video off the satellite, high-def coming off the satellite. Over the broadband pipe, you're getting video on demand and a lot of broadband-type content delivered to your television set. And so in a lot of our rural areas where you want both broadband and video, that's how we'll deliver broadband and video. I think that will have a lot of use for us for a long time as we wait to get the UVerse product built out into rural America. No, and in a lot of parts of our footprint, it'll be a long-term solution until we can get the video footprint built out in those areas. It'll be a while. So it's Dish Satellite with our broadband product.
Okay. Another question?
My question is mobile broadcast TV.
Is about what?
Mobile broadcast TV. Mobile TV is a field that gained lots of traction in Europe, in Asia, DVB-H, etc. 10 months ago, you have announced that you're going to enable a Flow service to your customers. Flow is Qualcomm's new broadcast TV technology. The band that you acquired from Aloha was used recently for the DVB-H trial. Can you share with us some of your plans with regards to mobile TV, whether you plan to deploy DVB-H, perhaps MediaFlow?
Yeah, so one of the great advantages of the 700 megahertz spectrum, as you said, is the ability to broadcast video for all intents and purposes. You know, is there a business model there for that? If you'd asked me that question 12 months ago, I would have been very skeptical that people would use their handheld device to watch a lot of video. I didn't know if the model would evolve or not. And we launched this iPhone, and I'll be darned if, you know, this trip I just took to India before I left, if I didn't download season 4 of 24, right? And I caught up on season 4 of 24 on the way to India and back. And so I sit there and I look at this experience. I said, yeah, there's something here. The consumer will consume video in a handheld device. So I got it. If you believe that, you know, I've told you these data volumes on the wireless networks are growing fourfold every year. Let's start talking about throwing video into the transport area of wireless. Suddenly, that's going to send the spectrum requirements through the roof. The Aloha spectrum, you know, was done because that spectrum, number one, will accommodate video if you want to do that and that service evolves. And so that's why we went and bought it. It's largely to hedge against the opportunity of delivering video to wireless devices. And it'll also do data and voice, two-way data and voice.
In your mind, is the iPhone as much or more a video device as it is a phone?
Now, interesting. It's probably more a phone than anything else. When I look at just when I'm carrying mine, I carry mine on weekends, and it's basically a phone. But, you know, certain times, if I'm on an airplane over the weekend, I'll, you know, use the music. But it's probably 80% phone, 20% video and music.
Okay. I think we can take one or two more questions.
With the cheaper dollar, do you see foreign players coming into the market and buying up assets?
I think it's an interesting question.
America, land of amusing bargains. How far is that going to go?
It's an interesting question. It really is. I'll tell you one thing it does. It makes it very difficult for us to justify making acquisitions in other countries, right? So I guess by that same token, you would just assume that it makes U.S. assets more affordable. And I think that's an issue. I think it's a U.S. policy issue to be dealt with. So time will tell. But I would not be surprised to see people make plays at U.S. assets.
Okay. A final question? Yes, sir. You're going to get a microphone.
I'm curious about how you see the competition with the cable companies at a sort of strategic level. I mean, the popular number I keep reading is 70% of homes have got cable. Typically, they're already with 200 TV channels, 3 to 6 megabits. It's easier to add voice to that kind of service than it is to add television to the existing voice service. So at a strategic level, how do you see you guys winning against cable companies?
It gets to the question this gentleman here asked a moment ago, and that is, where is voice? Voice is becoming more and more wireless. If you don't have a wireless service, you probably don't have a viable long-term voice option. And so our whole strategy is start with wireless. You know, we are a wireless-centric company, and so you start with that $127 a month bill right into the home. I would suggest to you the most personal telecom decision anybody in this room makes is what wireless device and service to use. So now bundle broadband to wireless. Now bundle video to wireless, and I think we have a compelling competitive advantage. And that's how you see us go to market, leveraging aggressively off our wireless services.
Okay, well, I've saved the last question for myself, and you said you were a betting man. You showed you were a betting man.
$5, Jane.
I'm going to ask you the impossible question. Tell me, with all this build-out and the kind of network you've described in the future, what's the big surprise?
in your gut, what's the surprising thing that's going to be created by this kind of a global network?
None of us have a clue. All right.
Glad to hear it.
No. I'm serious. You put this kind of capability out there, you get, smart people like this developing capability and applications on top of it, and the next iPhone will materialize. The next, gee whiz will materialize on top of this. Telepresence. Those are all just kind of scratching the surface of what's possible as you really begin to integrate the broadband, the video, and the wireless experience, kind of on a comprehensive basis. And so that, I am now in a world where when I talk to you or I'm chatting with you, I not only know, who it is, but I know where you are, what kind of device you're on. Are you on your wireless device, your PC device? Are you sitting at your television? Where are you?
And Google or somebody's going to have translation on that, too.
Absolutely. Somebody will try to monetize that knowledge, right? And so I think those will be the kind of things that will evolve.
Well,
and
just to get people's heads going, what's the biggest long shot in your lab? What's the most amazing project you got under wraps?
I'm not going to tell you that.
Keep trying.
Yeah, I know. There is some fun stuff going. The stuff that's more immediately relevant, are services like video share. These folks over here are selling a service, video share, where I have my cell phone that has a video camera on it. And I sit here and I video you live and talk to somebody who's on this video phone across the country, and they're seeing this video live, and we're having a conversation. So the kids at the soccer game or EMS, think about EMS, think about realtors, and this kind of thing. Now, I get to this idea that that's IP.
Right.
That signal is being converted into IP format and delivered in IP. And guess what? Now putting that on your PC screen is very easy. Putting that on your television screen is very doable. And so just the ability to start moving this data around seamlessly, easily, quickly, simply is really what's going to change, I think, over time.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Let's turn it back to Rich.
Right.
I can't tell you enough, on behalf of the club, how much we enjoyed your candor and your knowledge tonight. It was a great presentation, Randall. And Quentin, you did a great job.
Good
again,
job,
on behalf of the Church Club, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have these wonderful T-shirts for you to remember your night at the Church Club.
All right.
We hope you'll wear them proudly.
This is great.
Right. Thank you so much.
And those black mugs are yours also, which say Church Club.
Good deal.
I went to Silicon Valley and all I got
was
this
lousy
T-shirt.
So I want to wish you all a happy holidays. Thank you for being here. We hope we'll see you maybe tomorrow night or next week. And have a safe drive home.